Welcome to Mentioned in Dispatches, the podcast from Western Front Association, with me, Dr. Tom Thorpe. The WFA is the UK's largest Great War History Society. We are dedicated to furthering understanding of the Great War and have around 6,000 members worldwide. For more information, visit our website at westernfrontassociation.com. It is the 26th of June, 2025, and this is episode 262. On this week's podcast, Charles Fair explores the history of the 60th Division at Salonika during the Great War. This talk was delivered as part of the London Pride Conference in June 2024, which explored the history of the London Territorial Force from 1908 to 1921.
I'm quickly going to say a little bit about the 60th Division in Salonika, particularly a period of about 2 months up in the Krushabogan Hills. And this is a quote taken also from the 23rd Battalion history. France had made us realise the grimness of war, but the Balkans taught us to be soldiers. So although I think the boredom must have been immense at times, there were moments of excitement. I think a key point to make is the front was very long. So the scale, the British section of the front from the River Vardar on the left, right the way around through to the Gulf on the right, you know, that's similar to, if maybe even greater, the length of the British Army on the Western Front. But the force density was very, very low. 181 Brigade moves up January 1917, and it takes over a piece of front. This is the march up to the front line. And they take over a length of front that is actually 12 miles long. So Barbara's looking at this because she's got a map that may appear in due course. A 12-mile front is a huge frontage compared with what we're used to seeing when we go to the Western Front to look at the battlefield. Each battalion had about 3 miles of front. A company commander had about 1 mile of front. And what we see is, getting back to what Jake refers to in his recent paper, it is much more like a colonial style of warfare, a small war, with platoon commanders and company commanders having a huge responsibility in a sense they didn't in the more claustrophobic Western France. And this is up at the top right-hand corner of that. It was Fort Dover Teepee. This is the 21st London's headquarters, which we found back in 2011 when Alan and I and some people from the Salonika Campaign Society, we went and dug around and we found it, rock cut into the rock there. Various members of the society exploring it. But the scenery itself is vast compared to that claustrophobic bit to the Western Front where, you know, it's a very short distance across to the other side. The Hodsa Valley, where these men were fighting, it's a vast landscape. So the Krushabogan Hills, where they were based at, about 3,000 feet. The other side of the valley, the Belushitsa Mountains, they get up to about 6,000 or 7,000 feet. And the views are vast. So in the far distance, looking into the French sector, those mountains in the far distance there, you're probably talking 40 miles away or so. So it gives a very different complexion to the soldiering. These are the mountains close up. So the main Bulgarian position was on the top of that ridge. That wasn't something you were going to capture. You know, realistically, there were going to be no major army division on division engagements. So what you do find is a war, when they're not getting bored, the bits of activity, the patrollings, long-range patrols. This is the route, that red arrow there, is taken by reconnaissance patrol, going out 5 miles out, 5 miles back to explore the ground. The brigade, when it goes up there, it moves into more offensive posture to start to dominate no man's land. and there are various Bulgarian positions in the bottom of the valley. Then this is the sort of reconnaissance report that they're producing. A lot of detail, sketch maps. They had to learn the ground before they could do anything more offensive. So there were various positions in the centre of that valley. Like here, this is a small feature in the flat valley called the Hodza Redoubt. It's only a few metres, couple of metres probably above the surrounding landscape, but that was a small fortified position. There were repeated raids on that and their various other positions. Behind it, the Crusher Bolgan Hills, about 3,000 feet. So the battalion commands are up on the top. The frontline positions are down on the bottom. So if you want to go up to battalion HQ, you've got to go 2,500 feet up, 2,500 feet down. These men got bloody good at navigating, and they got phenomenally fit. And also, when you look at the maps, the Londoners named all the landscape features after places they knew. Clapham Junction is there. There are lots of other bits of London. I found about a dozen landscape features with London landmarks. This also meant artillery. Where did you put your artillery? You can't see it, unfortunately, because the light, but there are nice arcs. Each pair of guns had a big arc covering the fire, just to prevent the Bulgarians from massing. That's showing the battalions. So the artillery was tended to be on the medium to higher slopes of the valley, dropping down into the valley itself. Communications then becomes difficult, even more difficult than the Western Front. It's not just field telephones. You've also got multiple redundancy built into it. So they're using heliographs, flags, dispatch riders, both and runners, just so that messages could get through. And that's one of the headquarter trenches, the approximate position of the 22nd London HQ. I think Kate Wills is here. I think that might be your husband in the background there. It is definitely. I can see it better here. So I think that was a landscape which is very, very different to what we're used to seeing when we go over the Western Front. It's also very, very pretty, so well worth a visit with Alan and the Salonika Campaign Society. So in those few months, the brigade carried out five major raiding operations. They were bigger than, much bigger than fighting patrols. They were really, 300 or 400 men at a time, seeking to dominate no man's land. But it was relatively low risk. Often it would be a case of the Bulgarians deciding they weren't going to fight, they'd run away. So it was a very safe, in that sense, a relatively safe environment. But towards the end of March, the division starts concentrating on the left of the British line near the River Vardar. And this is the closest it comes to getting anywhere near a Western Front experience. So it concentrates, the whole division now has a front line of about 8 miles, 7 or 8 miles of front from the Vardar Valley on the left over to the right. And its role at this point is then to provide some diversionary operations for the forthcoming First Battle of Dwaran. Fortunately, it does not take part in the battle itself. But again, the trench raid here is different in nature from what you see on the Western Front. This is showing the company positions, very dispersed compared to the Western Front. And they're going for this place, top left, called the Nose, a fortified Bulgarian position. And the division is supposed to do two raids on the Bulgarian position. One of them gets cancelled, but the 2nd 20th Londons have a raid to do on the Nose. It doesn't work. Some of them get into the frontline trenches, but the Bangalore torpedoes and so on aren't really effective. And this is the closest we get to a Western Front-style operation. But it's over some pretty bare-ass terrain. That's the position itself on Little Hill. There's a watchtower there which looks into what's today Macedonia. But in terms of casualties, it's a relatively safe environment compared to the Western Front. I mean, some of the men who served out there, I don't know about your research, Jake, and but they think of themselves having had a lucky war in that sense, reflecting on it, because the casualties going to Macedonia and Palestine are about one-fifth of the of their equivalent battalions, the sister battalions on the Western Front. And this is showing the breakdown for the whole division for those 6 months. And that sort of medium blue colour in the middle, the tallest bar there, that is the casualties, the 2nd 20th London's, that trench ride. It's one operation accounts for the bulk of the operation in the division, the biggest number. So looking at soldiers died in the Great War for those battalions, what I don't have is the gunners and the engineers and so on, but for the infantry and the yeomanry, 131 dead in 6 months. And they then go on to Palestine. And one of the points that's made in the 23rd London history is that actually it's this relatively low risk, almost training operations they're carrying out up in the Crusher Balkan Hills equip them for the work they then had to do under much tougher tests in Palestine, where they were doing long distance movements at night through the hills of Palestine. And it was partly this experience of being in Salonika which helped them to do that. Right, that's enough of that one. So now we'll just have a few minutes of questions. Jake and Clive, do you want to come up? And we'll just handle any questions at this point.
Mademoiselle from Armateers Parley-Boo. Mademoiselle from Armateers
Parley-Boo. You have been listening to the Mentioned in Dispatches podcast from the Western Front Association with me, Tom Thorpe. Thank you for all my guests for appearing on this edition. The theme music for this podcast was George Butterworth's The Banks of Green Willow. It was performed by the BBC National Orchestra of Wales, conducted by Krish Russman, and produced by Biz Records. This recording is part of a collection of orchestral works by Butterworth, performed by the BBC National Orchestra of Wales, and supported by the Western Front Association. This is available from all good record stores under the record code BIS21. 95. Until next time.